Escuchas. Escuchas un podcast de Dixo.
Escuchas Crimen Digital con Andrés Velázquez.
¿Qué tal, amigos? Bienvenidos a esto que es Crimen Digital, su podcast sobre delitos informáticos, ciberseguridad, todo lo que tiene que ver con el cibercrimen. Mi nombre es Andrés Velázquez, me encuentran en Twitter como @cibercrimen y recuerden que pueden llegar a seguir nuestras redes sociales de este podcast en @crimendigital y en el Facebook de Crimen Digital. Escríbanos para saber qué es lo que les parece este podcast. Ya no se puede vía la página nada más pusimos ahí el último episodio. Así es que vía las redes sociales, díganos que nos están escuchando para que podamos llegar a mandarle saludos o algo por esta vía. Yo estoy muy contento porque tuve la fortuna de reunirme mientras me encontraba en San Francisco en el RSA Conference o el RSA Conference de ciberseguridad con una persona que muchos de ustedes saben que yo admiro y que fue alguien que escribió un libro que habla sobre posiblemente el primer caso donde se hizo una investigación de delitos informáticos por ahí de finales de 1980, prácticamente los 80s. Y que en este caso, este libro yo lo he platicado y lo he conversado, que fue increíble para mí, para entender qué era lo que quería llegar a dedicarme. Estamos hablando de The Cuckoo's Egg, o mal traducido al español como El Huevo del Cuco, que fue escrito por Cliff Stoll. Y tuve la fortuna de conocer a Cliff por allá del 2011 en una conferencia. Y habíamos estado en contacto de alguna u otra manera, pero ahora que vine a San Francisco le escribí, me invitó a su casa y ni siquiera me dejó hacer la entrada del podcast. Lo verán cómo empezó esta primera charla.
Well, I want to do the introduction and everything, but
sure.
But
first you have to say the date.
Exactly.
2020-02-24.
25.
Okay.
So, yeah, exactly. Okay. It's Tuesday today.
And welcome to San Francisco. Welcome to the Bay Area.
Thank you very much, Cliff.
It's always an honor to meet you.
It's always really good to talk to you. And
it's been way too long.
Yeah. And we were talking about, before we started recording, about security. And I don't want to do something. It's just a chatting between friends.
Yeah.
And we're talking about that we're using, I think we don't really understand what security is.
Yeah, long ago, as a kid, I knew I was secure. I had a mom, my mother, father. They took care of me. I was secure.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd come home, and the house was waiting for me. My parents made sure everything was secure. If you asked me, I'd say, oh, yeah, it's a nice place. Today, I can see that no two people have the same definition of security. For one neighbor, security means, oh, nobody will break into my house.
Mm-hmm.
Another person says, oh no, security means when I walk on the street, nobody will bother me. Third person says, security means that, oh, any mail or any packages that arrive for me, they'll all get to me quickly.
Another person can say that if they have money in the bank,
that it'll stay in the bank. It's there for me.
No, but it's going to be secure for their retirement or for everything.
For retirement, yeah. Others define security as phenomenally different ways. People call me up and say, I'm sure I've got a virus on my computer because it's not working right.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, it's not a virus. You're not understanding how to use it, or you're doing the wrong thing. Common problem in computer security is for non-specialists, there's a small number of things in their computer that they know how to do, and sometimes they get out of that shallow part of the computer into a deeper part, and it doesn't work the way they want it to, and therefore, it's a virus. It's mm-hmm. a computer problem. Mm-hmm. It's a hacker. Mm-hmm. And a huge problem for security people in computing is to look at this, understand what they're doing wrong, and teach them not elementary, simple computing, but intermediate mm-hmm. user interfaces. Oh, no, what you're getting here is okay. That's nobody's breaking into your computer, mm-hmm. even though it's slowing down or it won't go to that website that you like. Oh, there's a good reason why it won't go there.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, computer security professionals have to... This is getting off the subject. I'm so sorry.
That's fine.
One of the things I think computer security people have to be is curious. I feel there's no general solution to security just because what you said a minute ago, everyone has a different definition of security.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, there's no complete bulletproof, shield that works for everyone. The woman who just wants to send email mm-hmm. and know that her husband gets it and nobody else gets it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different security problem than the bank that wants to verify that a transfer is going through.
Yeah.
At the same, so because of this muddy definition, the word security, it's a nice friendly word, but it's like talking about goodness. We have to all be good. Well, wait a second. Good for you is different from good for me.
Ethics.
Yeah. Yep. What's ethical? So what I'm getting at now is, what do I expect a computer security professional or worker to do?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I expect, as you mentioned, is ethics.
Mm-hmm.
They are in a very, very trusted position. They're looking for bad guys. They are the guards who are guarding the guards. Next thing that I expect a computer security person or organization to be is competent in computing.
Mm-hmm.
Ought to be able to sit down at a system and start poking at it and understand what's happening and understand what's normal and what's weird. Another thing that I expect a computer security professional to do is to be aware and kind to the other people in the department and in the business. They shouldn't come in and say, "I'm in charge. None of you can use your computers, or I'm going to install something on each of your computers that'll slow it down,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to need to memorize 20 character long passwords that change every 2 days."
Right.
No, good computer security mm-hmm. does not get in the way of good guys, of people trying to make the business work. It should ring bells when something wrong is happening, and it should prevent catastrophes. One of the things I think should be not a requirement, but something that makes a computer security person attractive is curiosity. When something's not right, don't just let the something not right be, Splunk or a parser says, this might not be okay, but I'll let it pass.
Mm-hmm.
Look for the hiccups. Look for what's normal. Find all the normal things and get accustomed to them
mm-hmm.
so that when something is a little bit off, you'll start wondering and you'll start exploring. The same curiosity that you have when you go exploring a new part of the city. You know what's normal, but you can say, this neighborhood feels different. The reason why I'm saying this,
mm-hmm.
I'm leaning on you, is because so much in computing and computer security depends on very boring things.
Mm-hmm.
Just installing the latest updates, keeping things moving so that you ring a bell if somebody puts the wrong flash drive in,
mm-hmm.
warning people over and over, do not open this type of email. It's boring and people think that you have an easy job because you're doing the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
My claim is to make it interesting for the grunt workers, the workers down on the floor who are doing security, they should also be curious enough to look around and see what's happening on the local area network.
Right.
What is the connection? We have a VPN going to another office over there.
Mm-hmm.
How are we really connecting? How much do I trust that other office? How much do I trust that they're secure as we are? Or could it be they are doing a better job than us?
And now we get to this term, trust.
Yes.
And
yes.
We cannot use it on cybersecurity in a good way.
Fundamentally, how when you build a computer, all software is built upon trust
mm-hmm.
of the parts that go into it. Unix, Windows, everything is built upon predecessors and mm-hmm. ancestors mm-hmm. and 5 decades of research and work. We trust what's been made before us. We trust the ingredients that go into our recipe for a working system.
Mm-hmm.
We trust most of the people who use our system. We have a difficult time figuring out who is not trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Hard time to say, I'm not sure if that person there is.
But it's different. In my case, that I came from well, they come from a country that we're facing so many security issues on the physical side.
And my claim is everyone is. My claim is, oh, you should read, where's the Good Morning newspaper? I cut this out so I could show it to you. I'm sorry, forget the microphone.
Don't worry.
I had this over here and wanted to. Editorial for Bay Area editorial 2 days ago saying we should, you've probably seen it already, that the we should get rid of Washington, D.C. as capital and go back to Mexico City as capital. Did you see the article?
No.
Oh, I've got to find it for you. Oh, it says completely reasonably. Uh-huh. My wife would not have thrown it out. It's a wonderful editorial that says, look, the changes in Mexico City mm-hmm. are so positive and so good, and the changes here in the state is so crazy and so nutty that we need to change from, we need to go back to our original, California needs to go back to Mexico and get out of it's a wonderful editorial. It's saying that we gotta change this. Where is it? I had it. I made a mark on it saying, I gotta show this to you when you come over. And now it's lost. My wife probably. I'm sorry. I'm wasting everyone's time. Sundance is good. Did she take it? She might have taken it. The newspaper junk pile. Here it is. I give this to you.
Thank you very much. So Mexico City,
as the capital of California. Take that back with you.
And when
people start saying, "Oh, we have big problems," show that to them. And say, the important difference is the progressive attitude, the idea that we're working on these problems instead of closing our eyes and saying, oh, no. I read that and I said,
but
yeah.
But isn't that a matter also of perception?
Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks it's better somewhere else.
Exactly.
And we see
that every day as a citizen. We see that as a cybersecurity expert,
yep.
as a business owner.
Yep. We somehow believe that, oh, so-and-so has the right idea. No, there's no... With the internet everywhere and with nations fighting over the internet, I perceive computer security is going to be less and less a little division. You paint security on
a support division.
Yeah. Everyone for the past 5 years, everyone says, oh, when in development, we have to push security to the left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people just say, you know, we have to design security into our product instead of adding a password at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Partly from what you said at the beginning of our conversation, I think that is a dubious statement, that if security is poorly defined, if security means something different to each person, how can I tell a Python programmer or a C programmer, oh, make sure at the very beginning that everything is secure?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you mean by secure? Oh, well, have all the highest security techniques put in at the very design document.
Mm-hmm.
What's secure to me is not secure to you.
Right.
And they may be mutually incompatible. The person who says high security means a 20-character long password. Another person, high security means formal logic has been applied to make sure that the program executes in the following way. It's a nice feeling to say design security into everything that is written. Ever since Windows XP, software is filled with holes. Mm-hmm. Software is buggy, and clever people will take advantage of some of these bugs. Having said that, let me tell you some of the thoughts that I have.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I've done this on my own website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm a believer in honeypots and tripwires, not because they're effective in stopping people, but because they're effective in telling me when I have a problem.
Visibility.
Yeah. Visibility of security troubles. Mm-hmm. Visibility of troubles.
That we're not leading into that right now.
Yeah. For example, I think, again, a curious computer security practitioner, worker, mm-hmm. should have some files on the server, open to everyone. Anyone can read it.
Mm-hmm.
And they ought to watch to see if anyone reads that file.
Mm-hmm.
If it's ever touched, someone is scanning my system.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
We should have tripwires that notify us of troubles. Early warning that someone is doing something that they shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
We should have honeypots that will, when someone is looking for a particular thing, they'll go there. And that, in turn, notifies us that, someone is sneaking around here.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, because we're dealing with, I always think the person I'm dealing with is smarter than me.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where I am, I always say, whoever I'm with in the room, they know more than I do. So how can I catch them mm-hmm. when there's trouble? So what can I do when I'm in the room with somebody smarter than me?
Mm-hmm.
So build into our systems. Now, here's an opinion mm-hmm. I hope you'll argue with.
Mm-hmm.
Security problems that lead nowhere. Have a fake door over there.
Mm-hmm.
A door that says security hole over here. And it'll take you 3 hours of programming to find your way into it, around it, sort of capture the flag.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. but capture the flag with something that's a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it takes you a long time to find out that it's a dead end. And as you work on it, it keeps being more and more promising,
mm-hmm.
but more and more dead.
Right.
So that the person who is screwing around with my computer is wasting their time and giving me warnings of mm-hmm. who they are.
Yeah, because
I don't see this happening professionally.
Right now, pretty much, we have all the systems that are just
vanilla, ordinary, nothing, straight off Microsoft. You know, I bought it, I plugged it in, turned it on, turned a switch, said high security, turned that one on.
Exactly. And pretty much when you have a security operations center, probably on a company, they're just looking at, okay, our firewall stopped the scan.
Yep. Crowdsource.
If you have somebody that is actually trying to get in, they're not going to do a
scan. They're not going to try that. They're, you know, when you're playing CTF, you know that, the mm-hmm. firewall, of course, is going to stop the following attempts. Don't go to port 80.
But also not only in cybersecurity, also in investigations.
How do you unwind an investigation that's where somebody's covering up their footprints?
Or when our investigators are doing an investigation and they don't have all the information clear on what they have to find.
Yeah, what are you looking for?
Exactly.
Again, I'm sorry To me, it's a... This is pouring some water. To me, the cool thing about creating trapdoors and holes of your own is it gives the security investigator a chance to see who they're up against, especially when who they're up against may be around the globe, far away from you.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you have a place in a bank where there are 10 files, one of them conversion rate from US dollars to South Korean currency,
mm-hmm.
conversion to Iranian currency, conversion, mm-hmm. and have files that do that are well labeled as to what the currency exchange is,
mm-hmm.
what the current rate is between different currencies, and you've marked these so that nobody should ever look at them, and you find that, oh, whoever is doing this always first goes to look at the Korean one. Oh, I have a small clue.
You're trying to profile something that we don't do on cybersecurity, or at least on digital investigations.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't have that
we
time
know that
and...
We know automatically that whatever their IP address they're coming from is fraudulent.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's no way you can do a physical trace back in real time. But an attacker's interests show themselves.
Mm-hmm.
An attacker's, or an intruder will show, first question, is it somebody who knows my business,
mm-hmm.
or does not know my business?
Motivation, opportunity,
yep.
you know,
so
all these things.
So how can I determine that? Oh, I make some files which are clearly personal files about the president of the company having an affair with some woman, something or another. The outsider will ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
The insider will immediately read that.
Exactly. But
you know, you and I, this is an obvious thing to do.
And it's obvious because it's part of what you actually did.
Yeah, yeah.
Back
but
in
I
the
mean,
days,
you would do that also.
Exactly.
You know, and
if we have access to the network and we can prepare it, but most of the times we're not.
They never allow you in. Yeah, it's only after a disaster happens that you walk in. What I think of cyber investigators are, they're like the people who investigate fires afterwards,
mm-hmm.
Arson,
mm-hmm. right?
A camera beforehand, a video camera recording things, would solve the problem completely.
Exactly.
Is it an electric fire? Is it a person threw a torch? Is it a cat that brought a match in? But afterwards, all you have are cinders and.
I normally say that we're not incident responders. We're incident reactors.
That's a much better way to put it.
Yes. Because we cannot
prepare. Yes.
It's easier to understand it that way. And later on, they ask us to do all the response that they didn't have. So they have no visibility. They have no idea what's going on. But
on the other hand, what you're doing is you're describing... You've just outlined, in two sentences, you've outlined a division of your company.
Mm-hmm.
We will prepare you for troubles.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll prepare you for troubles in two ways. The way we will prepare you for troubles, importantly, is we will put defenses in the places that we think are most likely, in the places that we think you need.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way that we will prepare you for troubles is we will make sure that there are people recording what's happening so that if there's troubles, we can figure out where they came from and why.
If there's an homicide, we need to be sure that there's a camera, that there are witnesses.
And that the body will be found.
Exactly.
If the homicide happens and the body disappears, which is what your investigation really a lot of the investigations, I'm imagining, but must be, we just lost 100,000 whatevers. We just lost some packages. Somebody shipped, somebody shipped fruit someplace and it's gone. You know, it's a homicide without a body.
Yeah.
Money's gone. I don't know what happened to it other than it's not in our bank any longer. In a, it's the difference between a missing person report and a body report. One you can figure out, oh, what happened to the other one, you just say,
I don't have it.
We'll watch for it.
But at the end, and what you're telling us is the skills and the soft skills that a cybersecurity guy has to have.
Is
not only a matter of the skills itself.
It's that
soft skills. It's a
the
huge
soft
thing.
Skills, what you're saying is, I want someone who is intelligent, sensitive, aware, and competent in the computing system. I want somebody who will change their way of thinking. And at the same time, a soft skill of, I can do very, very boring things all day.
No.
I can do a boring thing all day long, as long as,
I have a reason of doing it.
Yeah, I have a reason. I want spices in there. And to me, that's one of the really good things about capturing the flag. You're up there with other people and you're sort of showing, hey. These are good things. RSA conference, you're meeting people, you're getting ideas, you're having a chance to speak to others about the headaches I have.
That most of them will have it too.
Yeah. One thing that does not happen as often as it should, when there is trouble, people tend not to talk about it. It's not for me as a computer security person to talk about it. I'm working as under contract to a bank, to a store, and they want quiet, that they've lost money or have had troubles. I'm, of course, on the side of be open. Tell people your troubles. If you don't, you heard me say this 10 years ago. If you don't publish it, it will happen again.
Right.
Only it'll happen to other people much worse. And you won't get credit for stumbling onto it. Tell people about what's going on. Maybe not publish it in print, but tell people at a meeting, at a conference. Tell people who are working, oh, watch out for this problem. And to me, it's the joy of computer security is that you can look out a wide domain. In programming, in building a system or user interface, you're trying to focus on doing a really good job in a very narrow area. To me, computer security is an extraordinarily broad field, ranging from programming all the way up to user interfaces, all the way over to keeping our workers and our customers happy.
It's like medicine.
Yeah, it's like medicine. Yeah, you can be a GP, a general practitioner, ought to cover everything.
Yeah.
And you can be a specialist that covers only eyeballs.
But I don't think we have the right people. And it's going to be very challenging. You heard about this lack of experts, right? And that's something that is affecting pretty much all the world. But it's
and
a matter
it's
of
happening.
How we're educating, isn't it?
It's. I agree. You're asking a whole nother question.
Yeah,
how do you get,
I want to get into that.
How do you get smart, competent people?
Mm-hmm.
Especially, how do you get smart, competent people to do a job that nobody will ever thank you for? Computer security, you know this. Nobody ever comes up to you and says, thank you, you did a great job. Wow. do that tomorrow again. Nobody says, this is brilliant.
No.
The best that you can hope for, the best that somebody in computer security can hope for is annual report. This year, we did not lose any money due to security problems. That's the best you could hope for. Anything other than that, people throw dirt at you. And so, for a lot of, also, computer security costs money and time and personnel. It's not something that's a profit center. All of these things, and in addition, another problem with computing, with securing systems, is it takes time, takes an understanding of what the business, the government is trying to accomplish, requires human interaction and trust, and it takes expertise and training, well, as well as following what's happening online. You've got to read 50 bulletins daily to see what's attacking me. Yeah, it's a major problem to find somebody who can do all of this and at the same time be a trusted, ethical person.
Right.
Those are, to me, trusted, ethical, competent are the foundation.
Yeah.
After that, you start asking questions about, oh, are they curious? Are they going to be reliable? Do they show up on time? Do they,
A final question for the podcast. Yeah.
Could I mention something I've thought about before? And I've,
sure. Go ahead.
Those of you listening on the podcast may or may not care about this, but I've often, there's a mathematical term called orthogonality.
Okay.
Orthogonal. And it's very much like perpendicular, where you can change the x-axis. You can make a move in X without changing your motion in Y. Mathematically orthogonal things don't disturb each other. For example, global warming and sea level are not orthogonal. As the Earth gets warmer, sea level rises.
Right.
Global warming is orthogonal to the location of the planet Mars. They have nothing to do with each other.
Exactly.
The height of human beings is not orthogonal to the food they eat. Just isn't.
Right.
The height of human beings is not orthogonal to their gender.
Right.
The height of human beings is completely orthogonal to the phase of the moon. When the moon changes its phase, people stay the same height.
Right.
Got that. What I want to see is orthogonality between system administration and computer security. What do I mean? By that I'm saying we need systems installed where trusted system administrators, the people who you go to when something breaks, who install new software and keep things working, where they are not in charge of and have nothing to do with the security of the system. Almost every place I go, the system administrator, sysadmins, are also in charge of the security of the system. They're the people who check it. And
there's a conflict there.
There's a conflict, an immediate and obvious conflict, and it shows up with people like Snowden at the NSA, where, oh, your system administration. Yeah, so I can copy everything and read everything. My claim is we need to build systems where security and trust is orthogonal to, has nothing to do with system administration.
Cybersecurity.
I want to make, another way to say this is, I want a system where I do not trust, where I can hire an untrustworthy system administrator.
And talking about that, in Mexico, for every company, they hire guards.
Yep.
And they do background check on them.
Yep.
But they don't do it on the IT staff. that they have more access, and the yep. risk is even higher yes. than the guard.
Yes, yes. So, if you're a guard, the same thing happens here. If I can hire a guard with, they don't even have to have a gun. They just have a uniform.
The badge.
Yeah, the badge, and they push people around, and nobody likes them. Yeah, they have to have a background check. Here, you want to be a system manager of a bank? Nobody's going to check your background. They don't do a credit check on you. Have you been cashing a lot of checks? Who are you in touch with? No, you're a bank employee. What my claim is let's assume that system administrators are not trustworthy people.
Mm-hmm.
The person who has root access and sysadmin access to your system is not trustworthy. Then how do you make a secure system? See what I'm getting at?
Right.
Once you're given...
At the end, cybersecurity is more a strategy.
Yes. Keep going, please.
And not an operative...
Yes! Yes! It's a strategy and a group of... It's a way of... Security in general is more of a mindset of how can I get what we need, much more than, it's a fixed firm foundation or building. And so what I'm saying here is we should assume, I'm sorry, you're reading my mind. He's good at reading my mind, so I'm going to speak to you only. You don't have to listen.
Okay, I won't.
We need a way to permit a business's system to be secure, even though some, and perhaps some important people themselves, are not to be trusted. And I think it's not a challenge for a computer programming, but as you point out, it's a challenge for a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
How would we do this? How do we
change how businesses,
how would we change our
government?
Thinking? Yeah.
Because actually we have a huge gap in between the technical people and the decision makers.
Yes.
So we have to go from the top down.
Yes. Yes.
But they don't wanna hear us because the way I see it is that they are scared on how we talk. Yeah. How we,
for example, 25 years ago I spoke at the NSA and mm-hmm. I delivered this talk, and yet over and over at the NSA, unfortunately, they've had people inside their organization steal very secret information and publicize it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make an organization like that be internally secure? Well, one way is to have everybody checked out, fingerprinted and everything, but it still hasn't worked. So my question is, what should the strategy be to detect when you have problems and to prevent them what should the strategy be when there are a small number of people who cannot be trusted and you don't know who they are?
Right.
Huge and fascinating problem. I'm really glad. I am happy that it's your problem and not mine.
Exactly. Exactly. That was what I was thinking right now.
Right.
I need to finish the podcast and we will continue talking. But thank you very much, Cliff. It's always very good talking to you.
It's a delight chatting with you.
And
what people in the podcast don't realize is we're sitting around in my kitchen in Oakland, Berkeley, California, and we're having some tea together, and it's just a joy to see you again.
It's really good to see you too.
What do you call it? Springtime outside?
It is.
Trees and, blossoms on the tree. You know, you're accustomed to it, but over here it's kind of rare.
Exactly.
And I'm tickled and honored that you come by.
No, thank you very much. And and I just want to tell you again, you know, your book actually changed my life, as we have spoken before. Yeah. And yes, I make my students read your book and everything, so I'm going
to... Tell them to...
They're going to listen to this, so...
Okay, students, if you could each go out and buy 30,000 copies...
Okay.
You will pay for my children to go to college.
We'll try that. Well, no. We're gonna leave the.
I get a penny for every book sold.
It's not what you were.
No.
And we spoke about that last time. The books are not really.
You don't make money from books.
Yeah.
But you spread ideas around. You get people to think.
And it's even better.
Yeah. Like a podcast. The purpose of the podcast isn't, oh, you make money. Mm-mm. The purpose of the podcast is, it isn't even you spread information.
Mm-hmm.
You make people think and you make people argue with you. That's the purpose of a book. It's the purpose of a podcast.
And I really
argue with
you.
Me.
I really thank you the time to record this and to the ones that are listening. You're listening to Crimen Digital, or in English, Digital Crimes. We will talk to you later.
Pues hasta aquí dejamos este podcast que yo creo que ha sido uno de los más interesantes y por lo menos el que más me ha divertido. Ese momento donde se levantó y empezó a buscar periódicos alrededor de toda su cocina y terminó yendo hasta la sala para poder llegar a traerme este periódico. Ha sido muy interesante. Así es que, pues, una joya más para este podcast, Crimen Digital. Y pues recordarles que nos pueden llegar a seguir en las redes sociales, @CrimenDigital, en Crimen Digital en Facebook, y que queremos llegar a escuchar de ustedes qué es lo que les pareció este episodio. Así es que no me queda más que agradecer a Dixo por la edición, la producción. Gracias, Vero, Peter, por el tema de estar editando todo esto. Y pues aquí nos quedamos. Esto fue Crimen Digital.
Dixo presentó Crimen Digital con Andrés Velázquez.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.